Could you build a business that's better for our planet? That's what I have set out to answer. Hi, I'm Marco Pimentel, marketing expert and entrepreneur and host of the podcast, Someone Like You. I become fascinated in finding creative climate solutions in business. And on the podcast, I break down how founders and CEOs are building climate-friendly business solutions that are opportunities for growth while being better for the planet. Every day, the urgency to address climate change grows more pressing. Yet, amidst the daunting challenges, there is a beacon of hope, a movement driven by countless ideas, companies, and individuals dedicated to effecting positive change. And today, we're sitting down with Kip Pastor. He's an award-winning filmmaker and the founder and CEO of Peak Action, a public benefit corporation at the forefront of this movement. Kip shares his journey from filmmaker to climate advocate, emphasizing the power of storytelling and shaping perceptions and driving action. With a track record of producing viral content and impactful documentaries, Kip understands the pivotal role of media in educating, inspiring, and mobilizing communities. Through Peak Action, he's harnessing the power to change the conversation surrounding climate change while focusing on solutions, positive stories, and tangible impact. Kip and I discuss demand for their services and how that demand has grown over the years, how to build an audience. We discuss storytelling in terms of the different media formats like YouTube and Instagram and TikTok. We dive into the new approach to media businesses and that the old way is a bit broken. And we talk about the mission of Peak Action. From social media outreach to public awareness campaigns, Peak Action is reshaping the narrative one story at a time. Prepare to be inspired and empowered to join the movement for a sustainable future.
This is absolutely, unquestionably, an all-hands-on-deck situation. So if you have an entrepreneurial tendency and you want to build your own thing, do it. It's hard. Even better, find other entrepreneurial partners and build something together. I think that I am an optimistic person and I have great hope, but we're not Pollyanna-ish. There are no rose-colored glasses. There is going to be untold human suffering. You know, no matter what happens with Peak, I will be creating content in climate for the rest of my life because it's a passion, there's a need, and I believe that it can and will continue to make a difference.
Welcome to the Someone Like You podcast. We got lots of things to discuss. You know, I'm very passionate about media and publishing and the work that you're doing. Kip, welcome.
Thank you so much, Marco. Super excited to be here and chat more today.
Before we get into the details of the business and what you're doing, was there any correlation to what you were doing in your past that kind of led you to where you are today?
Yeah, absolutely. You know there is, right? And it's interesting. In retrospect, there's a pretty clear path. I think at the time, you don't always know what the future will hold. I think Steve Jobs sort of said that really well, that looking backwards, you can connect the dots. And there's two phases of who I am fundamentally. One was there was always an emphasis in my family on being outside your comfort zone is the best place to learn. And that could be in wilderness. It could be in travel and international travel and education. And then on the other side, you know, wilderness was an important through line. So I spent time hiking and climbing and mountaineering a lot. And that for me was, I always felt close to conservation. So I also come from a family of doers who have spent careers wanting to affect change. So that was also instilled at me at a very young age. So I went to college and I studied diplomatic history because I thought I was going to land in politics. And I thought that politics was going to be the most effective way to affect change. So after school, I moved to DC and I found out very quickly that that was a bit idealistic. In fact, that politics sort of intuitively is about winning and losing. And that's a lot more of the emphasis. And that wasn't the right fit for me. So I did some international trade consulting. I moved back to DC. I said, now this is the time for me. And it was the same. So I actually started taking night classes in film and it clicked immediately that storytelling was going to be the most effective medium to disseminate ideas and ultimately to affect change. And so as soon as I realized that, I moved to Los Angeles. I went to graduate school out here to get the best education in storytelling as I could. And right out of school, I started directing and producing my first feature documentary, which is called Inorganic We Trust. And it was focused on agriculture and sustainable agriculture and food systems. And I also started a commercial production company because if all you're doing is documentaries, it's going to be an uphill battle. And, you know, it's a challenging business model. So instead, I started producing a lot of commercials, which I would never have moved to LA to do, but was really incredible because I got to use other people's money to do things I'd never done and really sharpen the tools in my toolkit. And so I actually really enjoyed it. And I learned a lot, and I learned a lot of client-facing relationship building and communication. So fast forward to today, I toggled a lot running my own companies and also being an executive in Hollywood. And, you know, all of these things really led to what Peak Action is and will become, which is, you know, storytelling and content first, but with the idea of having other points of leverage as it relates to climate.
And that first kind of idea for Peak Action, what exactly was it? And how did you take that first step to starting it?
Yeah, it's a great question. Always a good question. I think I had been making documentaries since I was out of graduate school. I'd been producing commercials, and I'd also been working in more traditional Hollywood. And my last role was working for a few prolific Hollywood director producers. And I was overseeing production for their movies and their television, but they also really understood that digital was critical. And so we started a series called 60 Second Doc. It's just like it sounds. You may have seen them. They're fairly ubiquitous. And I built the team for 60 Second Docs. And it was an experiment because we were deficit financing these projects, but it exploded. And by the time I left, I'd produced the first 150 of them or so, and they had billions of views across platforms. And so I realized, you know, there is a world in digital where you can reach new audiences, you know, and this is 10 years ago. So obviously it's clear that that's working now. The other thing I did when I was working for them was I produced the first ever Snapchat feature film. A lot of buzzwords, but we basically made a movie in real time, shot vertically on an iPhone. And for somebody who went to film school, to shoot on a phone vertically there was a bit of distaste at first. But what I realized and loved about the project, aside from the collaborators, was it was a thriller, thriller horror movie. You know, it started with an influencer at her apartment, and then it ended in a haunted house in the woods. And I learned that there was new ways to do storytelling with new formats, and that ultimately the archetypes are the same. Ultimately, the structure can be the same, but that there's ways that you can do storytelling that evolve and that you can innovate. And it was very successful. It had 110 million views. And, you know, when we signed a 5-picture deal to do 5 more just like it. So those experiences percolated in my mind for how we can do storytelling for climate in different formats to reach different audiences in different ways. And so, you know, Peak Action in some form has been in the back of my mind for a while. But what started to take shape was leveraging social content and then thinking about, like, what is the next iteration of storytelling and how can you reach different audiences in different ways and then activate them? And, you know, when I say activate them, that doesn't mean, you know, getting them to show up to a protest or donate money to a nonprofit, although that is, you know, an action. We're thinking about higher leverage. We're thinking about jobs. We're thinking about, you know, B2B corporate education as avenues to have bigger change because, you know, I don't know how many TikToks you have to watch to make a life change, and behavior change in general is pretty challenging. But with things like work and education as it relates to work, people are doing that.
Yeah. So it sounds like you kind of honed on that specific area. And was there a bit of an issue with the market that you kind of saw that was like, oh, like just like these are incredible innovations, but they're just doing a poor job storytelling and people should learn more about this? Was that kind of the connection?
That's definitely part of it. So I think that there were two insights. Insight one, I think you got it spot on, which is there is a dearth of talent in climate storytelling. But even more importantly, climate tech has not done a good job of telling the story about climate technologies. They've done a really good job talking to investors and B2B, but the public is mostly unaware of the radical innovations that are happening. And I think the other part is that everybody's been doing the same thing. Media is not designed to address climate, right? And storytelling is and can be. And so there hasn't been a new narrative for climate. It's been the same thing we've all seen and we're all tired of. It's polar bears floating out to sea, it's forest fires, it's floods. But we haven't seen what human innovation can do and what the future could look like. And we haven't focused on instilling positive human stories that focus on solutions because the rest just create paralysis.
And I guess that leads to how do you, I guess, with storytelling, get the impact that you want? Because I think that's one of the challenges with storytelling. And how do you, I guess, measure that or think about that when it comes to your business?
Yeah, important question. We think about the impact side a lot. You know, I think storytelling might seem like a really limp response to the climate crisis. You know, narrative is not going to stop sea level rise or coral bleaching, but it is a fundamental tool that is available. It can be cheap and it is endlessly renewable. You know, and as a kicker, as a society, we really aren't going to act on climate until we are convinced that we can actually make a difference on it. So I think knowing that storytelling is important and that culture ultimately moves politics, and because we need a global coalition of systemic change, that you have to do storytelling. And then, you have to take it down layers to think about who your audience is and what is the outcome you're looking for. So for us, we have a bunch of different series. We have one series, it's called Next Now, and that focuses on the human side of innovation, that focuses on climate tech. We've done about 70 profiles there, and you alluded to that as these companies haven't done as much storytelling on themselves. You know, it's challenging for companies to tell their own stories. And so we've done that. And we know qualitatively and quantitatively that those series is helping those companies to raise capital, close customers, and recruit. So, you know, that's not built into our business model right now. It's something that we've been testing and measuring, but we know that. And we have lots of anecdotal evidence. I talk to CEOs every week that say, you know, I was hiring a chief of staff and this person came to us because they saw your video and we just hired them. And so we know there is an impact on that level. You know, one of the biggest challenges with media and content is following what that impact can look like beyond engagement, especially on social media. But we measure that too. It does tell you something. We have over 30 million views across platforms. We have a really high engagement rate across platforms as well, which shows us that our audience is in fact authentic and that they want the content that we're serving them. But we've also segmented that audience. You know, we have another show, it's called Unfucking the Planet. It's comedy, it's like John Oliver, and that's reaching a totally different audience than the climate tech audience. But there are overlaps.
It really shows, like they're kind of that perfect balance of time, and they're done really well. Like I think most of them are probably 3 to 5 minutes kind of thing, but they pack a punch, and so they're really, really valuable. But I know media quite well, and I know that you need a lot of views to get the CPMs and everything on YouTube to help fund these type of things. So like, how did you kick off the business model, and like, what was your idea to fund obviously all this filming and work to put these things together?
Yeah, that is a good question. I'm going to give the truth as best that I can. When I sat down and charted the business model and the strategy of Peak, it was with the lens that the media business model is broken. And that was before the studio business model was as broken as it is today. So to your point, the idea of making money off of CPMs and ads, ultimately when we were at scale, was to cover the COGS of our original series, basically, right? So when we do original series and we don't have a sponsor and we don't have a company that's intimately involved, we're financing that off the balance sheet. We're deficit financing those projects because we love them and we can do them faster, cheaper, and better. And it's a good way to get a lot of data and information. So part of the secret sauce is that, you know, I've been a filmmaker for 20 years and I've worked with filmmakers and everybody's passionate about the space, and there are ways that you can do it that can be less expensive. Typically, video is quite expensive, as you know. So one was accepting that this media model is broken and that might cover the cost of goods to produce some of this content. Also, then the next level down was, okay, well, we can also do the sponsorship of content once we have a critical mass of audience, or at least an important audience. And so we started that like right out of the gate. So we actually sold the sponsorship before we even had any audience at all. And the reason was because there were myriad of value adds to the sponsors. So sponsors have been nonprofit organizations, accelerators, private equity, venture capital, and they will sponsor a series of films, and typically it'll be for companies that they like and support. We will still do storytelling from a very objective place. Nobody gets to have notes on the creative, but that's part of what we do today. The other thing that we do that is not scalable, but is really impactful, is we will do white label commercial production services. So basically, we will make commercials for companies in the space. We did a series with Google that we just got a Webby for on the sustainability efforts that they've been doing at the data center. So we did a film on one of their partners in the Netherlands who's recycling water to cool the data center. So that fits squarely into our ethos, but it's not a scalable part of the business model, but it's really important for both the ecosystem, business development, ultimately, and revenue. The third thing we do right now is we do campaigns for organizations, nonprofits, and brands. We work with a bunch of creators and we help develop and produce all that content and then disseminate it as widely as possible. That's all sort of what I will call phase one of the business model. So it does look a lot like a more traditional media model. But to scale impact and scale revenue, we are focused on the action side. And on that side, we have been testing and we have been experimenting to see, you know, the sequencing of the product lines and then ultimately, you know, which ones can be the meatiest from an ARR perspective to, again, then, you know, have that flywheel of impact and revenue. And so that stuff is, you know, I alluded to a little bit. It's we're thinking about exactly how to plug in with jobs. We are working on some educational products as well and some B2B storytelling.
And I think the broken model of media is aptly true. And you and I chatted before this that I'm on the board of the Narwhal. And, you know, they decided to be a nonprofit for that exact reason, because they didn't want to be led by advertising dollars. And what's the cool picture of them is that half of the revenue that they do get is through just individuals donating $10, $11, $15, $20 per month. And it's grown astronomically because of it. And so seeing new models that aren't advertising based is obviously really, really important. And I guess that leads to the question of like just the demand and the market. You've been filmmaking for many, many years. You've been focused on climate as well. Have you seen that demand now become a lot stronger? Is that market now really pulling you in versus you trying to push on it?
The short answer is it's lumpy. And as a result, that part is hard to forecast. Overall, there is a much greater desire to do sustainability storytelling. Also, as you can imagine, it's still a nice to have, not a have to have. I would argue it's table stakes, but, you know, we're not quite there in the market. But the appetite for us is bigger than what we can do. The big challenge for us is scaling personnel at the right moment to fulfill all of that and continue to grow. And I think that's the challenge of any startup, is sort of finding what that right balance is. For us, you know, our growth curve is not that of a venture-backed company at the moment. We are a sustainable growing business. Because we're talking about existential threat, I want this thing to be on overdrive, but I also want to do it in a way that makes sense. To your point, there's several nonprofit media companies that just do incredible work. Narwhal, Grist, Canary Media, these are absolutely essential. And just because they're nonprofit doesn't make the business model any easier and doesn't mean that business development isn't a massive part of what they do. And I think what we found, though, in this ecosystem overall with climate storytelling is that everybody is there to support. And we have also done a bunch of collaborations with other climate media storytelling shops that have different expertise. And I think that's just a win for everybody.
And I love the statement of a sustainable business, because a sustainable business allows you to keep doing what you're doing. And obviously that leads to more impact. I wanted to take a second to tell you about our season two sponsor, Springwise. Springwise is the global ESG innovation platform that offers its readers early access to the ideas transforming our world. I actually started using Springwise probably 10 years ago to review innovative startup ideas, and I've been a fan ever since. There are three new stories on the site every weekday featuring solutions to some of the biggest challenges we face as a global community. You'll find innovations in climate tech, renewable energy, plastic alternatives, the circular economy, and how we can live a more sustainable life. The stories are sourced and written by the Springwise team of journalists and will give you an inspiring take on what's right around the corner, whether you read it to inform your work or simply for a regular dose of optimism. Springwise sets the innovation agenda. The newsletter is free to access, and to sign up, visit springwise.com/newsletter-signup. You are a public benefit corp, and I'm just curious around, and I'm sure listeners are too, of just like how you went through that process to decide
on someone
to
like
be a public
you,
benefit
we dive
corp,
into
and
stimulating
why
conversations with founders,
yeah,
entrepreneurs,
really
business owners, and the likes who are consciously and successfully creating sustainable business solutions for the long haul.
So
tune in every week for a new inspiring conversation on leading climate solutions. And if you're enjoying the podcast, please share it. And also, don't forget, subscribe on the platform of your choice and give us a rating and review.
Important advisors and friends and peers, ultimately, because of the goal of having as big of an impact as possible, we ultimately decided that we wanted to be a for-profit company. And then you said, okay, well, now that we know this, what's the right structure for us to have some accountability? And there are a bunch of third-party certifications out there. You can be a B Corp, but it is a third-party certification. The public benefit corporation is actually a legal structure. And basically what it does is, for us, the mission is to create education around climate change. And so ultimately, if I were to be fired from my own company one day, or we sold and somebody took over and we were acquired, or we went public and you have shareholders sort of driving the direction, ultimately, the shareholders have to make sure and hold the business to account that we're achieving that mission. And so my sense was that that's really critical. No matter what, that's what we're supposed to do. And if we were to be acquired by a larger media company, for example, because we had a large audience, we wanted that audience to still be learning about climate rather than being sold a bunch of other products. So that was the idea.
In terms of the audience, because you are obviously creating your own stories, but you're doing it also with other companies to kind of share that story as well. And they're using those videos and they're doing that. How important is that kind of collaboration with those companies in order to build your audience? Because it is obviously, especially in today's age, it's very difficult digitally to create a large audience. And I'm just kind of curious what your thoughts are and your strategies are for that audience building.
I mean, it is a moving target. Even from when Peak launched, there was an evolution. So the first overall strategy, which isn't going to change, is we want to meet people where they are in a format that they expect and recognize. So what that means is a YouTube video should look more like a YouTube video. A TikTok should look more like a TikTok. And a LinkedIn video is going to be directed for a different audience. So it's not to say that you're not on all of those platforms, but you're expecting different kinds of content at each one of those platforms. And so we want to be able to do that. It's not just like cutting down the YouTube video to throw it on Instagram, although we do different iterations of that too. So one of the biggest insights we had when we started was we wanted to use some of this influencer creator 1.0 audience growth strategy. So we worked with a bunch of creators in the space, believing that they could throw their audiences to us. And what we found was that strategy wasn't working as well as it used to. But what was happening is these creators do excellent content. They know their audiences. They know the content their audience likes. They get to shine their research, their intelligence, and their personalities, and people gravitate to that. So we ended up working with a bunch of creators to create content on our platform, not even for their audiences directly. And we found that that was, especially on TikTok and Instagram, a successful strategy. You know, things have evolved and changed, and preferences and algorithms will continue to shift these things. One of the other strategies that we adopted at the very beginning was we want to be platform agnostic, but we also don't want to spread ourselves too thin. And I think there's a bit of a dance there, and there are lots of learnings there. But we do have a presence on most platforms, and we're hitting and targeting different audiences. And each one of those audiences and how you reach them have a different impact. You know, like I said, I think TikTok, I don't know how many times they have to see a TikTok for it to make an impact versus a YouTube video versus a LinkedIn video, but they do have different levels of impact. The other thing we've been doing a lot is, like you said, we partner, and because we're mission-based, we want to share and be good collaborators. So we'll collaborate on Instagram with ostensible competition because in our mind, nobody's competition and everybody's elevating the right thing, which is important storytelling. So I think that's another one of these things that make this space unique. You're not often going to see CBS and ABC collab post on Instagram, but you will see us with other media companies that are in climate do that.
There's a couple of important points there. You mentioned like the formatting. Like when you watch a Next Now video on YouTube, it's engaging. The time is kind of perfect. It's easy to watch one
and then another one. And it's really formatted for that. And then I think the other thing too, is it depends on the platform growth as well. It's like, it's really hard to grow on Instagram right now, but oh, TikTok's growing. It's like, well, the audience on TikTok has grown astronomically. And so, you know, the growth there is kind of natural because that whole entire audience has been growing over a period of time. So, you know, you touched on some of the product ideas, but when you just think about big picture, 3 to 5 years, where do you see yourself, or where do you want to see Peak Action?
You know, I like the combination of being consumer facing, but also doing a lot behind the scenes. I think one thing that we will do better in the future is communicating that we're doing both of those things simultaneously. You know, Peak was started with this idea that it's going to be a big, impactful, large company. And that is still the vision. And I think that's why for us, we think about what sequencing looks like. You know, when we sat down and I drew the first diagram of what this company was going to look like, and I don't know if it's a good analog anymore, but it looked a lot like Disney for climate. It looked a lot like these different products that all leverage the same kind of IP that feed into each other. And I think there's a lot of ways that we amortize the deficit finance content, the commercial content, the originals, the sponsored, where we recreate. So like right now, for example, the Next Now series is really sort of like a targeted kind of a series, but now we're recutting it with a creator. Doesn't talk about the company. It's all a creator, direct to camera, really TikTok and Instagram, but it's got like B-roll and green screened in footage from all of those shoots. So I think it's like taking the library, growing the library, licensing the library, building new IP with the library. You know, on a media and content side, we're developing a bunch of longer form projects. These were all marathons, feature docs, climate fiction. So on one hand, we want to reach different audiences with different content that takes more capital and longer to produce, but also have a potential for even deeper impact. And we want to sequence out some of these other products that are more for businesses to help them grow and in their transitions in ways that is a have to have, not a nice to have, leveraging new technologies to make that even more efficient. And we've been working with that on the campaign side. You know, we've hacked together a bunch of off-the-shelf tech to make that more of a seamless process and a scalable process. Seen really good success with that. So it's going to be developing those products and sequencing out when we bring them to market.
I just have to ask, because you obviously get to meet and film some pretty incredible leaders and entrepreneurs and people doing some really innovative things. When you think about just building a business that could be better for the planet, and obviously you're showcasing a lot of these people, should people get into working for these companies? Should people that are sitting on the sideline thinking about, I should start a climate-based business? Like what are your thoughts?
I mean, we need everyone working on climate. We need every job to be a climate job. It doesn't mean you have to quit your job to get a more direct tie-in climate job, but it means that you should turn your job into more of a climate job. This is absolutely, unquestionably an all hands on deck situation. So if you have an entrepreneurial tendency and you want to build your own thing, do it. It's hard. Even better, find other entrepreneurial partners and build something together. I think that I am an optimistic person and I have great hope, but we're not Pollyanna-ish. There are no rose-colored glasses. There's going to be untold human suffering. Unfortunately, a lot of it's going to initially be in the global south for people who are less responsible for it and have received less benefits. So yeah, I think if that's what you think and that's what you want, absolutely do it. You know, no matter what happens with Peak, I will be creating content in climate for the rest of my life because it's a passion, there's a need, and I believe that it can and will continue to make a difference. You know, there was a very famous baseball player, Hall of Fame baseball player, and also, you know, armchair couch philosopher Yogi Berra said, you can see a lot just by looking. And, you know, I think that few people see the revolution that's happening in climate tech. Few people really understand that collective action is going to be the only way to create the systemic change. So it's not an either or, it's an and it's all an and. And so I would absolutely encourage anybody who wants to get involved. And think of me as a resource. I think one of the things that I've loved deeply, and it's been great connecting with you too, is that there is a shared catharsis of experience for people already working in climate. Nicole Kellner, who's a climate artist, has a painting that hangs in my office that it's a pie chart of the feelings while working in climate. And they're exactly what you expect them to be. I love this. This is amazing. I'm making a difference to there is no hope, you know, or I'm stressed out or this is hard. And it's all of that. So I think what I found is as you build community out, even in the most localized way, that everybody is really being supportive.
Kip, this was a pleasure to have you. I think everybody should be, if they haven't already been following Peak Action, how can people learn a little bit more and follow you and Peak Action online?
for your audience, I'm going to point them to YouTube. It's nicely organized. You get the highest production value of the storytelling. You'll see the comedy of Unfucking the Planet. You'll see the humanization of innovation. Next Now, we launched a new series on climate tech in the Global South with an incredible partner that understands those stories need to be told, called Reinventing Tomorrow. So I would go ahead over to YouTube and just search for Peak Action. And you can always find me across all platforms, Kip Pastor and or Peak Action. And again, you know, we are in this together. So if I can be a resource in any way, feel free to hit me up.
Thanks again, Kip.
Thank you so much, Marco.
Thanks so much for tuning into the episode of Someone Like You. We hope you found our discussions today really insightful. Next week, we'll dive into another entrepreneur or founder building a business in climate. So stay tuned. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and review us on your favorite podcast platform. It really, really helps us out. Follow us on LinkedIn, where we also post really great videos from this episode. Thanks again for listening, and we will catch you on the next episode.